You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt with my main man, OJ McDuffie. Juice, you looking relaxed today, man. How are you feeling over there?
What's up, Big Seth? You know, I'm doing pretty good, man. You know, I mean, anytime I can talk Dolphins with some former great Dolphin players, man, I'm in a great mood. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like you took the show on the road, which we love. Fish Tank never stops, no matter who's traveling. DJ Priest, you feeling okay?
I'm feeling good. Not as good as OJ's 29-year-old looking ass right now, but
no, man, okay. We get older and older every friggin' episode, and Juice is somehow going in the other direction.
I mean, St. Augustine, Todd, so I had to found the youth, man.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Shaved head always helps with age.
It hasn't helped me.
I know.
It hasn't helped me. Well, listen, you just heard the voice. If you're not watching this thing, you're only listening to it. Juice, we've had some big names dive in the tank. We've had some monstrous names. But I think the largest human being who ever created quite a splash here in the tank is joining us right now. 6'8", 317 pounds at some point in his life. I don't know. He might have leaned up a little bit now. But Todd Wade, welcome to the tank, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, man. It's always great to have Big Todd, man. You know, such a gentle giant. But, man, is he like one of those tough-ass dudes, man, you just don't want to mess with, man. You look at him, man, and, you know, you think about saying something maybe silly, and you're just like, you know what? I love my life, so I'm just going to leave this guy alone.
Let's think twice about this
one. Yeah, you damn right you do.
One of my first real, real good conversations with OJ was actually at the elbow room my rookie year before minicamp started.
Sounds about right.
Good home time. Base right there. Home base, Todd. You know how that is.
Yeah, that went too far from my spot.
I love it.
Maybe we should do one of these on remote from the elbow room.
From the elbow room. Next time Todd comes in.
Yeah, I'll probably be going down there for the boat show again.
Yeah, I talked a radio show that I was on into doing a, you know, every Friday at the elbow room.
That's excellent.
And we were off, you know, from 10 to 1. So from 1 to 9, I was at the elbow room. Not working.
Not too bad.
So here we go, man. So Todd, you come in as our top draft choice in 2000. We had no first round pick that year, so we select you in the second round. But talk about your draft class as a whole, man, because it was full of some characters. The Ben Kellys, the Deion Dyers, Arturo Freeman, Ernest Grant. I mean, you guys had and all over the field. You got a DB, a fullback. You got another DB. You got a defensive lineman. Of course, you're an offensive lineman. Talk about that draft plan.
It was funny. With that, I think the Marino retiring the year before, they were trying to go a different route, bolster the running game and bring someone in there that could help with that, because they were going from the pass-heavy offense to more of a balanced attack. So that, you know, that was obviously why they brought me in. Sorry about the cicadas in the background. It sounds like they're – No, but that, it was interesting. And then, you know, getting to meet all those guys is so much fun as a rookie. You see all the guys that get drafted, and the free agents, and you kind of bond for a little bit. I mentioned the elbow room and earlier, and kind of getting we were almost like tourists. We all went there. We didn't know anywhere else to go. But getting to know those guys was just great, and we all kind of stuck together because you're kind of going through the same thing, getting harassed by the veterans and everybody else. We didn't really know a whole lot, didn't know how the practices were formatted because it seemed like it just went on forever. It wasn't any more necessarily difficult than college, but when you don't really know when it ends and when it starts and what you're supposed to do, it just seems like it's overwhelming. And all those guys, and I'm, you know, Deion Dyer and I were really, really close, and Arturo Freeman, just really good guys in that group.
Yeah, and then Ben Kelly. I have to tell you my Ben Kelly story another time.
I haven't heard in a long time.
Well, listen, you talked about getting harassed by the veterans. That offensive line, let's talk about these guys. So immediately next to you is Kevin Donnelly, you know, then Tim Ruddy. Of course, Mark Dixon, a absolute favorite here in the tank, and then the legend Richmond Webb on, you know, the bookends there opposite you. How much fun was that group? I guess we have to throw Hunter Goodwin in, too. We should throw Hunter in, you know, just as one of those guys. He sure wasn't here to stretch the field. So let's throw Hunter in that group as well.
Well, I actually spoke to Hunter last week. Got a random text, great guy. But that group was, I couldn't have asked for more as a rookie. I had a 10-year vet right next to me in Kevin Donnelly, Richmond Webb. That was his, I believe, 11th year. And he was Richmond. Well, some other people were wanting to get the hazing going. He really didn't care. He's just like, leave the guy alone. And I felt like I was a pretty good rookie. I kind of did what everybody, what you're supposed to do, even though I was able to dodge the rookie dinner. They waited and waited. They kept pushing it back. And then they would remind me about it. And as the season went on, I was like, okay, well, I'm obviously not going to say anything. It comes time to playoffs, and we beat Indianapolis and in Miami, and then we go on the road to Oakland. And they brought it up after we lost the game. I don't know if might have been Tim. Someone came back. Oh, hey, we're going to probably get together and do that. And the whole time in my mind, I'm like, this season is done. You can try to fight me, but I'm made for dinner now. So that's it. Now I was going to do it.
I'm not a rookie anymore.
I would have done it. So I actually started getting a couple of calls from a couple of them the following week, and I was out of town. And that was the end of the story.
Traveling, then. Your phone wasn't working. All that.
You know, hey, you know the rules, Todd. You're not a rookie. You're a rookie until that third game of the second season, correct?
That's by the NFL rules.
Yeah.
By the who's buying dinner rules. Yeah. I'm with you though, Todd. So like, I get this thing all the time. In business, I shouldn't have to chase you down for you to invoice me, right? You know, if you want me to pay you, invoice me. So it's the same kind of deal. They shouldn't. You know, you shouldn't have to be chasing them down and taking them to dinner.
It's like sending a deposit back to someone. If they're not going to give you your address, how do you get in touch with them, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
Oh, but you know what, though? They caught you after the playoffs, though. So that means you had one playoff check already. Indianapolis, right? You had another playoff check. So when they catch rookies before they even get their money. So you were lucky they tried to get you at the end of the season instead of at the beginning when you just got that new money.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and speaking of the playoff check, I'll never forget. I think it was right after that game on the way back, B-roll, little Brad Roll, telling Trace Armstrong that we let him down.
Was this coming back from Oakland?
It was.
Oh man, B roll was heated.
You can imagine it. You guys let me down. You let me down today. Y'all quit on me. So not the best time to bring that up.
No, you're right. I remember, and that was a long ass trip. Right?
That was. I tell you what, for losing a playoff game and returning and going across the country, coming back home, everybody was kind of enjoying. You know, the season was over. Nothing you can do about it. So people were drinking and having a good time.
But that's what B-roll got so pissed about. Not only, you know, it sounds to me like he had spent that damn playoff check as it was. he thought that he was moving. But then everybody was having this party. And he was not happy.
And obviously everyone was disappointed in that loss. That was a terrible loss for us. Yeah. And I thought we had a really solid team. Gosh, couldn't ask for a better defense. And that was before Ricky. That was with Lamar Smith, and Lamar did a great job running the ball. It just one of those games that things from the start just fumbled. They picked it up, returned it, and it was not good. Both sides of the ball just didn't deliver, so we lost that game. But hey, at the end of the season, you're flying back. You're gonna, you're gonna have a little something to drink.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, what else you gonna do? Instead of them trying to pump something else in you, says you might as well do something you enjoy.
You're trying to get that toward all out.
Yeah, exactly right. one thing I do remember about Todd, especially in his first year, man, is that he wasn't afraid to mix it up, man. You know, it seemed like him and JT got into it like every single practice. You know,
daily, yeah, for sure.
And you know what? From what I understand, they continued
funny,
after.
Don't around me about that stuff.
I understand is it continued. I don't think you and JT are done with your beef, your practice beef. Is that true?
Man, that's on him. I went to my wife and I went to his Hall of Fame induction speech. That was my piece. I was like, I don't. Listen, there's other places I'd rather be than Canton, Ohio. You know, it's not the most fun place to go to.
It was awesome to see you there for sure.
It was some funny stuff too. And JT should be very thankful for me. I also saved his life once in a diving. We were diving. He didn't tell you that. Yeah, we were spear fishing. I was teaching him how to spearfish, and this is when we're using tanks. We're in my boat. We're off Fort Lauderdale Beach, and he got excited. You know, you see a hogfish there down there on the bottom of the reef and going down there. Well, you pull too much air. So he was completely out.
Oh, wow.
So he had just enough to breathe to get up. I mean, we weren't just extremely deep or anything like that. But it was – I had to hold on to him. So we get to the top. His BC, you know, inflated air to keep him bobbing on top of the water was completely empty. So he had all that weight in his tank just kind of pull him down. So I had to hold on to him. And we had to wait for the boat to get there. And my younger brother and another buddy of mine, Richie King, was – they had drifted off. They were, I don't know, it seemed like 100 yards away. They're probably 50 yards away, but we're like, hey, come back. It took them forever to see us. And I'm sitting there holding on to JT. JT was panicking a little bit. And I just want to point that out. That also saved his life.
Right. I think it's a fair thing to point out. Yeah. You know, just for a team that is known for the water, right? The Dolphins. Here we are, the fish tank. We had more near drowning stories in the tank here than anything else. But I want to get back. So I did call JT last night. He did not bring up the fact that you saved his life, so I need to call him back. But what he did say, I said, well, tell me about Todd Wade. He goes, well, he was a hell of a teammate. You know, iron sharpens iron. I'd like to think we made each other better every day of practice. He goes, but he held too fucking much. He's still holding. So what was going on over there?
Maybe a little bit here and there in practice. During games, actually, didn't hold enough. I'm not sure if it was my – third year, I didn't get a holding penalty the whole season. That tells you something. You know, in hindsight, I'd rather hold somebody than giving up a sack, you know, thinking back about it. But, you know, I think sometimes with offensive linemen, problems, what really ticks off the defensive linemen and like a one-on-one pass rush drills and things like that is that last push. They hate it. They hate it. Because you know they're not going to let up. But then the last second, you kind of give that last, just to kind of show that you won. You know, it's not just a push in the chest or anything like that because you're already locked up somewhat. But you're trying to get in front of them at the last second because you look a little better on film. They hate that. And that caused a lot of problems. And I'll never forget talking about a big scrap. I can't remember. It was a play-action play. And Randy McMichael, this is 2003, I believe, and during training camp and when things are heated. I had to go down, help Todd Perry with the three technique. While Randy McMichael was in charge of the blocking the DN, he had Wale. Wale was running up the field. Well, I'm supposed to just secure that three technique to help him. Then I released to go help the tight end. So Wale had beat Randy. You know, tight ends aren't supposed to just pass block all day, right? And I just wheeled around, went and laid him out. And JT had just come around the tackle, left tackle, and he sees that. And all of a sudden, I get speared in the back by JT. And its own. The disappointing thing about all that is the whole defensive line jumps on me.
I was saying Jay Williams was on that team, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. I love Jay. But I think Jay was in on it, too. I think he's trying to kick me or somebody's trying to kick me.
And Jay Williams came flying in, Juice. It looked like something Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or something off the ropes, man. And I was like, oh,
shit. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm at the bottom with JT. And I can't even move my hands. I'm just like this. But JT's face is right here. And I just reached my hand. I was like, look, I might get my butt kicked, but I'm at least get a little scratch in or something. I'm going to claw at his face or something. I just had my hand like on his face. And that, around that time, he was doing the Neutrogena commercials. And sure enough, I did get a little something in on him. And I was trying to hit him or something. But we're at the bottom, and I was really everybody was heated. And the offensive linemen, I don't think they'd really jumped in. I love the guys, but they're kind of grazing. They're grazing, watching all this take place and kind of shocked. And I'm sitting there fighting the whole defensive line. And it breaks up, and JT's yelling at me. So I go, you know, bring it on, you Neutrogena bitch.
Probably
in a big country accent. I don't know how it came out, but I said it. And anyway, I've never forgotten that. And yes.
Oh, that's great. So many fights happen in practice. People have no idea, do they, Todd? It's like people, and you know what people always like? You can't fight somebody on your job. I said, this ain't the ordinary job, man. It's like the glorified prison yard. You know what I mean? You got to establish yourself, man, so you don't get pumped out there. Oh, you know?
Absolutely. You know, just from and also from college, you know, things have changed so much now. And I think to me, for a little bit for the worse, because I think some of that's good, because nobody ever gets hurt in a football fight, really. You know, I've never really heard of it. And it's just, it's good for the intensity of practice. It breaks up. You go back in the locker room afterwards. Nobody even thinks of it. You move on. You know, I don't recall in my career, I don't recall anybody ever bringing it back to the locker room.
Right.
It's just kind of over with. But it was in college, my head coach, Tommy Tuberville, they were very, when it came to the little scrap in practice, they would just kind of let it go on for a little bit. And then they go, break it up. And the strength coaches run in and tackle everybody. So we're just these pawns for the practice to kind of keep the intensity going. But I remember David Cutcliffe, head coach of Duke, he came my senior year. And I remember we were just kind of wild like that. But I remember there were like two or three fights going on one time during spring training. And he's like, what in the world is going on here? He called the whole team like, this has got to stop. Y'all are out of control. So a lot of that was still going on in Miami too. So things that are really, it's just that kind of old school mentality. You're working. You're getting after it. You're trying to train. You're trying to do better. But it's hot, so things happen. And the good thing is, it does kind of keep that intensity going. Nobody really gets hurt, but you don't want to disrupt the practice too much either.
Yeah, I've heard some other guys. A buddy of mine played for 49ers at fullback, and they actually orchestrated a fight just to pick a practice up.
I believe it.
You know, it was my buddy, and he had to go at. He told him to go at Ken Norton Jr.
Oh boy!
Like, I mean, come on, man. Can you get somebody? Can we get another linebacker that doesn't have a heavyweight champion father?
Yeah, exactly. Right as you said that, I was thinking that's not good. I wouldn't want to be fighting him.
I'm a little disappointed too. Like you, like where were the other offensive linemen? Yeah. You know, Todd Perry and what was Ruddy doing? What were these guys doing?
I thought they liked me. I really did. I've never really asked that question. You know,
pissed off because you didn't take him to the dinner.
Still,
he'll be holding a grudge.
Yeah, I mean, just somebody. You know, you thought they'd have done something. But
they wanted no part of that, man. I remember that one. When I saw Jay dive in the way he did, I wonder if the Hack Brothers or somewhere have that film on some
season. I would love that. That would be incredible.
We got to track that one down. We got to track it down.
No, I do, but I do remember rookie year. I remember teeing off on Timbo and him getting upset. And, I was kind of being a rookie, all proud. And, you know, we came from the same school. And everything. So I showed a favor to him anyway because I liked him. And, you know, he's revered back here. But also, I remember guys pulling me after, hey, man, don't, not Timbo.
That's not the one.
Yeah, that's not the one. Like, look, he's got three speeds. You know, he can go this way, or straight at you. He can't go backwards. He's incapable of moving backwards. So it's like, that guy, he's that strong.
I remember it might have been Jason Cole, one of the writers pulled the locker room, and it was kind of like, who's the toughest guy in the locker room? Who's the one guy that you wouldn't want to have to mess with in a dark alley? And Timbo received 100% of the number one votes.
Yeah.
Like not a single person picked anyone other than Timbo.
You talk about your rookie year, Todd. Timbo's rookie year, they took his equipment and like folded his chair up like it looked like he got cut. Timbo said, you know what? I'm going to go home, you know, when I get back, want all my stuff back in my locker room, in my locker. He wasn't even playing. He wasn't, there's no thinking about, that was the only type of haze he got. And everybody, there's an APB out for him. He's at home chilling. That tells you how bad that dude was, the rookie. He wasn't taking crap from nobody, man.
No. I mean, I've heard stories back from him from high school. Around here is a small town outside of here, probably 45 minutes from here. And you know, somebody was giving this kid grief, and Timbo didn't like it. It was kind of a rough group was picking on a kid. Timbo went and got the guy's cheeseburger off of his – y'all didn't know this story. I know this. Oh, no. Got the guy's cheeseburger off of his lunch plate and slapped him in the face with it.
He slapped him in the face with his own cheeseburger.
You know, there's so many of those stories like that, too, with him.
So listen, Todd, you talked about it a little while ago with Lamar Smith, and you mentioned Ricky briefly. Talk about that, though, for three straight seasons as an offensive lineman who's brought in to establish a power running game to block for those guys. I mean, and they special talents, particularly Ricky, right? I mean, that's an all-time talent there. And also a couple of unique personalities. You got to have a couple stories.
Oh, man. Lamar. something that stands out, I remember, is my rookie year in training camp. We're staying at the kind of reminds me of the Zach Izzo.
Rolling.
Yes, at the country club or whatever, golf course, hotel.
It's not much of a country club.
Yeah. historic, right? Well, I get a knock on my door. I was a rookie. Get a knock on my door, like, I don't know, one in the morning, which is obviously pretty late when you're waking up at six or whenever. And it was him. And he had been out. He was feeling no pain. And he's like, hey, look, I'm right here across the hall from you. Please wake me up in the morning. And I said, you got it. And I remember we're in the huddle, and you could smell it, man. It was he did some good work.
How many times did he have to knock on the door to get him up?
I banged on the door. He got up.
All right.
That's what's up right there, though, man.
My responsibility as a rookie, I had to anyway, right? I'm going to look out for my teammate. Hey, that's my running back, man.
Hey, it helped. And Todd, as a rookie, to me, you think about it, man, you're not going to be late. I was so scared as a rookie to do anything wrong. Definitely not going to be late. Not going to miss meetings. None of that. I was like, you talk about that sleep, how important that sleep is. It's extremely important. But the wake-up call or getting up, before we had cell phones that really, like, got us up. You could set, like, six alarms on your cell phone nowadays. But back then, boy, you better get your ass up, man.
2000 was when I got my first cell phone. That was my rookie year. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't have one in college. There were probably two guys on the team that had them. And I don't know who they were calling with it because nobody else really
had one. You had one.
I remember, it was Zach and Izzo, right? They were just calling.
Yeah. I remember the black book. You know, I brought that with me. I was like, it's just steadily putting them in there. Oh, and they're all landline numbers anyway, so they're not going to be good, you know, just much longer. So 2000 was the big cell phone year, if I remember correctly. But, I was scared to death. I almost have nightmares of being late. And I was so scared of one time I was playing for Washington that I was late. I overslept and I was staying in Arlington, Virginia, made the mistake of moving a little too far away. Got caught like in the 66 or whatever. And I was late. I floored it. And I was welcoming a speeding ticket so I could use that as proof.
Right.
I'm not joking. Right. And it happened. And as excessive speeding, and I was in Virginia, they didn't play around with that. But I was that. Sounds nuts, but I was that. I thought I was going to get gut or something. I was scared, and I didn't want to. And that was the attitude he had. And, you know, not just as a rookie, but throughout my NFL career, that's one thing he didn't want to do. And I tell you about Ricky Williams. I've never, ever seen somebody that was so cool being not technically late the last minute. He's the last guy to always walk in the team meeting room. I mean, at the last second. And the coaches really couldn't say anything. And I think if they would have gone with the Tom Coughlin rule 5 minutes before, he would have been there 5 minutes before the last second.
He was like
that in the huddle, too. If I had my helmet off or something like that, or with the chin strap busted off, I'd be freaking out trying to put things on as fast as I could for the next play. He would calmly be – this is when you could have your helmet off on the field. They changed that probably a couple years later. And he was just kind of – we're in the huddle, and Jay would be calling the play. He'd be just messing with his helmet, kind of looking at it, just putting the, you know, snapping it, putting one snap on. But you can watch him. If you go back and look, like at the end zone cut-up view, you can see him right before the play. Snap, snap, and then snap, go.
Just take his time.
Like last second.
And then rip 40 yards off, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
36 power. Awesome.
36 power. You know, you got pretty close with another guest in the tank. You know, one of our favorites of all time, Larry Izzo. Talk about your friendship with Izzo. And I know you guys have some stories about Larry, man, because he did it up while he was in Miami and, of course, around the league.
Yeah, you know, Larry's one of the veterans that I got to know early on. And he actually, when I mentioned I lived off Los Olas on Hendricks Isle, Larry is the one that mentioned that. It's kind of a new construction condo building, like a four-story building, two condos on each floor. And Larry had gotten one of them and was, you know, telling me about it. And I could close like in December or something like that of my rookie year. I don't know if the timing was good for a rookie's time, but I did it anyway. So we lived there before he went to New England. And just a fun guy. I mean, he got me really going into karaoke. I didn't view it that the you know, they didn't have that, you know, when I was in college, and it had, but the AL Falcon Pub, incredible. Yes. Yes. I love it. If that is that bar still open?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Still there. They built a little outdoor patio, I think.
I like some. I mean, it's kind of dark in there. They could have used a little bit more lighting.
A lot more lighting.
You know, kind of wake up some of the alcoholics, maybe. It definitely had that look to it. But it was fun. You know, you go in there and, you know, Larry, and we would go in there and, you know, it could be whether it's after practice or on the day off, and they'd be showing the old, they showed Marino, probably you, OJ, but it showed people that they'd filmed it. You know, and they keep rolling it, kind of promoting their karaoke on the back screen. And you see all these good times, these old Dolphins players keeping tabs on everybody for 5-10 years, it seemed like. But, you know, a lot of the stuff with Larry, it's like some of it's kind of gross. It has to do with the bathroom stuff, and I can't really get into a lot of that.
Well, he did. Oh, it's okay. Yeah. We saw his game ball for making it happen on the sidelines, and he told us all about it.
The stuff in New England's incredible. I mean, what about he told me this story. He was with New England, and they're flying somewhere, and he had to go in the airplane bathroom.
Boy.
And he took off all of his clothes. He started sweating real bad, so he took off all of his clothes.
That was part of his routine.
Butt naked. I don't know if it's Belichick or Kraft or somebody came in there after him. He's sitting there butt naked. He's like trying to hold the door shut while they're trying to open it. Very awkward. It's a shame.
Oh, too much. What's your go-to karaoke song, by the way? Now, once he got you into
I was wondering my same.
It really, honestly, I go with the crowd. I kind of observe everybody in the crowd. I used to, I do make like more soul, like Me and Mrs. Jones by Billy Paul.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I get the ladies all fired up.
You know? We got a thing. Yeah.
But it's all about the act. Like, if you take yourself too seriously, you're not cool. You know, right. There's nothing worse than going there and seeing somebody doing Kenny Chesney or something like that. Taking themselves seriously.
Semi-professional, right?
Yeah, there's got to be a level of humor to it that you're not quite taking. You're trying to impersonate the person, but also there's got to be a level of humor to it, or you kind of kill the coolness of karaoke.
Right.
Well, I hope they're still running those videos, Juice, so we can go see. I want to go get it.
We're going to get a copy of that for sure.
Wade's film. We got to go.
They really do. Yeah, it's just kind of those, revolving videos that shows the old people, you know, players and stuff on that back screen. I don't know if they still have that or not, but that was
we got to do some research.
It's good history.
I love it. So listen, Izzo told me another story. Again, I told you, I did my research for this one here. And I would say I remember this, but I was long gone at this point. But at Zach's wedding, you know, at Zach's wedding, he said that the two of you had a great time at the wedding, as we all did. It was an amazing, amazing wedding. And he and Maritza, you know, proud parents of three beautiful children now and what have you. But when the wedding ended, the party did not end. Izzo and T. Wade. And I guess there was another banquet room. And you guys, were you guys wedding crashers?
We were. sometimes we're having, it's a mark of a good reception. You're having a good time, or a mark of a really bad one. You know, you want to get out and go to another one. But no, the party was over, good time, and that one was still going on, and we didn't want it to stop. But that was a good time. Overserved.
Now, did you think you were going to sneak in unnoticed, Todd? I feel like you in a tuxedo, you're going to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, I was a big dude then. I'm probably 275 pounds now. So I was I lost 35, 40 pounds at my peak.
Well, Juice, Izzo said T. Wade was tossing the bride in the air and the whole thing. That it was.
I forgot about that. Yeah, we got involved. We sure did.
Forgot involved.
They had a great time, and then he said, then at some point they kind of, after having, they were enjoying the party, the people who were supposed to be there, and then he said, wait a second, and then you guys were ultimately
like, y'all are great. Hey, who are y'all? Wait a second, this isn't cool anymore. Y'all need to leave.
It's awesome.
That's great, man. You know, I mean, you mentioned it before. I mean, speaking of Zach's wedding. And you also mentioned before about your diving, you know, your scuba diving. But Zach said one time, we had him in the tank here, and he said that, you know, you had a rough one out there on the water one time. Tell me about you and Zach and your time out there with him. I know you saved JT's life. What happened with you and Zach on the waters?
I'm trying to think. Okay. Was he saying that I got seasick?
No, he was saying, actually, he said you look like a giant shark out there underwater, but – You know,
Zach said he ended up with the bends or something.
Yes. Oh, man. I'll never forget that. Zach, he had just gotten his diving certificate or license, and, you know, he wanted to go. So we'll go out there. And I had a 32-foot center console, this kind of old Intrepid. And those places where Izzo and I lived, Izzo wasn't there very long because he left the next year. But we each had a deeded boat slip, which is really what I miss more than anything, you know, about South Florida and the access to the Bahamas and everything else around it. So it was really nice. You could just go, and it's just right there. You go, and so sometimes on our day off, I'd have some teammates, and we go and just roll out, have a good time, and do whatever, go to the bars or something like that. But, yeah, Zach, he did the opposite of JT. Where JT was completely out of air, Zach, on his way up, inflated his BC. So as he did that, just as you can imagine, like a ball full of air, you put it under in the pool and let go of it, it's going to shoot up. So that's what Zach did. And he came out of the water like the Hunt for Red October. And he had a nosebleed. I mean, yeah, he's lucky to be there with us.
God, it's one thing to push a little after the whistle, you know, in practice and to test our guys, but these are two of the greatest defensive players in the history of our franchise. What the fuck were you doing with them out on the water, man?
I was just taking them what they wanted to do, you know, and showing them how to, you know, spear fish. Yeah. They would have killed me. They'd have run me out of there faster, you know. But yeah, that's a true story, you know, and the whole thing, JT, he would not have been in the Hall of Fame had I not saved him. I just want that to be clear.
That should have been in the speech then, you know, with you being in the audience. That should have been.
I was kind of like, hey.
Wait a minute.
We're really good times out there. But I thought you were kind of going with this one time. One, I believe it's during the off season, so it's probably like around, let's just say, February or something like that, because it was very windy. I remember that being – it wasn't hot outside. So definitely that winter was kicking up. So the water was a little rough. I had just gotten the boat. And it's kind of funny, nobody else on the team had one. That's probably a good idea. But, you know, I'm the one that I had one, and I think JT had a nicer one. But everybody wanted to go, and I didn't even check the weather. It was like, oh, it looks good to me. It's sunny outside. Sure, I'll see y'all in the morning. And I think it was, I remember Lindo, might have been Rob, Jed, and maybe someone else. They'll show up to go fishing. And, you know, I didn't have the boat rigged up that well either. I kind of knew how to, you know, troll for some mahi or something like that. That's a max, you know, my saltwater expertise as far as fishing. And, man, we get out there, we start hitting the jetty, and it's just boom, boom. And none of us knew what we were doing. I was kind of trying to act like I was in control, but I really wasn't. And we started going. I remember going, I was really trying to stay optimistic about it. And we're just kind of trolling up and down the coast and trying to get somebody to help me a little bit, and they weren't. And Lindo was getting really sick. He was throwing up and stuff like that. And I'm sitting there calling him names and saying this and this, and y'all are ridiculous, and going. And sure enough, they're looking back at me, and I'm sitting there hovering over the wheel, and I'm sick too. We called it a day early.
That sounds like a great experience.
Well, yeah, it was horrible. The rubber bumper on the side of the boat had busted off. It was flapping. I mean, it's probably 8-foot seas.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, Seth, I don't know if you've ever been seasick, but there's no relief from it until you step on land.
Yeah. Yeah, once you step on land, it's just gone immediately. But man, there's nothing worse. And we all felt that way.
Yeah, it sounds like it. How soon were you all back out on the water?
I think that was the last time. Last time for them coming with me.
I bet it was. Well, Juice, I buried this later in here because I didn't want to set Big Fella off. But this is my favorite T. Wade story of all time. So, look, this is a big son of a bitch right here, man. And we would, you know, everyone would call him the Incredible Hulk. Especially get all mad at practice and get all swole up, and we like, he knows where I'm going with this. So to call him Incredible Hulk, maybe he favors Lou Ferrigno a little bit, you know, so we would tease him with that. Well, one year
I tried to act like it didn't bother me. I get tired of it. Go ahead.
You didn't have much of a poker face, Todd. You didn't. And I, you know, my dumb ass would poke the bear, and Todd would very quickly remind me that I'm just a skinny ass PR guy and that he's, you know, he's a giant. But we were in Orlando working against the Bucks, I think.
Yes.
And Coach Wanstedt decides that he's going to give the guys a break, and we're going to spend the day at Universal Studios. So imagine just what it takes to get this entire training camp roster, 80-something guys, and we go to Universal Studios, both parks. it was, you know, I take my kids to the theme parks now. I never had a better experience at a theme park. We traveled and they split us up into like groups of 15 guys and everybody had a group leader and what have you. And they split us all up and, you know, no wait on any ride. You just kind of got to breeze through the whole park. We were having a good time. And you mentioned Jed earlier. So Jed was with our group and it was Jed's birthday or something. And Finn's TV was following him. So I was assigned to this group.
Yeah, he's mic'd up, I think.
He was mic'd up. Well, we get on the Incredible Hulk roller coaster. And I'm like, oh, shit, Jed, we got to get T-Wade on this. Look at that. And so we walk up to a kid in line. And we give the kid $5. And we're like, hey, you see that big guy right there? And the kid's all freaking out. And we're like, I want you to go up to him and say, are you the real Incredible Hulk? And he's looking at Todd, you know, and this kid's like 9. And he's looking at this giant man. And he's looking at us. And like, I think we gave him $1 first. And he's kind of we're like, all right, here's $5. I don't know if we ended up giving the kid $20 or whatever it was. But he goes up and he tugs on his, you know, Mr. And he turns around. He said, are you the real Incredible Hulk? And Todd, and he turns, he starts looking around like, we're just hiding and trying to laugh. And he's getting heated. Then we get on that ride and it tosses you all over the damn place. But the best part, Juice, when we get off the ride, you know, they have that giant, if you've ever been there, and they've changed it now, but it's Dr. Banner, and then he's turning into the Hulk, and there's this giant Incredible Hulk, and somehow we convinced Todd to stand in front of there, and he posed and did the Hulk flex, and fucking kids came running all over the park, and they thought he was like one of the characters.
Yes. And then we go get crushed in that preseason game. Oh my gosh! Yes, yeah. That was something. There was a poster outside of it too. I think even Wanstead got in on it.
Yeah. Oh, everybody.
He was like, Todd, go take a picture in front of it.
The cameras are there. He was uncomfortable, and I'm just getting further and further away from him because I know he's coming right for me, Juice.
Oh man, it got to be. they know you orchestrated it, Big Seth. You know, we know you, man.
I had to stir the pot a little.
Working, doing it behind the scenes. That was probably 2002 or 2003.
I couldn't remember which year it was.
Might have been 2003.
Yeah.
Stuff, man.
But he was the Incredible Hulk. But you know, that park they have, that Spider-Man's there and Wolverine comes running by. Here comes the real Incredible Hulk. And there he was. And he was not. He you know, some guys just, all right, you know, here's the joke. Let me just embrace it. He was hulking out on us, man. Mm. He was not real happy.
You guys should have known that.
Well, at a certain point, you know, like you said it a lot.
Enough is enough, right, Todd?
Going on for a long time.
Enough is enough.
What had happened is the Hulk got popular. You know, they're releasing the movie and all that stuff. So you get people up. Or Jermaine Haley and some of those guys were messing with me about it.
You never know what's going to trigger that accidental dose of gamma radiation.
But that was a great time. And that was a great year, too. Junior was on the team and everybody, you know, it was just a neat group.
And you guys were operating under the direction of Tony Wise at that point. Absolutely. One of your favorites.
You know, I like Tony a lot, actually. It's a different system. The way our footwork, everything was a little different. We are, instead of having a wider base, it was almost like a track stance. So we were coming off the ball. So I do credit a lot of that and buying into that system for our success. Obviously, you know, it's having someone like Ricky gives you a little extra something. You're very proud and you want to do great for him. And, you know, he has the speed and the physical power to break a tackle, but the speed to, you know, do an 80-yard run, things like that. And it could happen. Just do your job. And we embraced that. And it was a good veteran group of offensive linemen. We worked pretty well together. We're all competitive too. You know, Jamie Nails, everybody. We wanted to be the guy, and that's the way it was. So we really relished in that. And that's the way I looked at it. One of the games that really bothers me the most when I was there was when we played at Buffalo. I don't know if he ran for 220 yards, but we lost the game. And, you know, that was one of those games that you're supposed to be celebrating. You know, you don't run that many yards, and that something like that happens. Talk about a unique game with that blizzard that just came in. There was a picture, I think, from Sports Illustrated. You can't see anybody. It's just you can barely make out some of the jersey here and there. But I remember I was blocking Chidi Yohannatu. I could barely make him out. and he was just right across from me. The blizzard was blowing that hard. But, yeah, we crushed him up front, and it's those games that bothered me more than anything just because our offensive line did well. We did our part in dominating and, you know, came up short.
Those are the worst.
That was awful, and, you know, Jim Kelly dancing on the sidelines as they were coming back. And then the thing that really got me was remember they had to de-ice the plane. Then we had to de-ice the plane.
That's, yeah, that's my time there. That was some of the best years of my life. I loved it. Loved my teammates, everybody. I remember losing a game. I think we went and lost to New England or something like that. And I remember coming back, and that's when we'd land at that signature. We're in Fort Lauderdale, and we'd park at kind of off Griffin Road or something like that.
Right there by Rustic Inn across the street from the.
Yeah, and but I remember after that, it's almost something like from high school. I remember a lot of the guys on the team, it was too late. It must have been like a New England game because it was too late when we got back to really go do anything. But we're all really tight on that team. And I remember all of us going to like a gas station parking lot like we're in high school, you know, having some beers, just talking.
Yeah.
And that, I miss that more than anything. And, you know, that was a special time in my life. I loved it.
So, you know, so following your Dolphin career, Todd, you move on to Houston. And we heard that you have very interesting game day routine, man. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what Boss Hogg was about.
My car? Yeah, that was a 69 Coupe DeVille convertible. That was only fun for a while because we started losing. It was fun, you know. It kind of killed that. So I was like, I'm not going to keep rolling the Boss Hogg out.
Right.
But it was great. Actually, the strength coach there had the Longhorns. He's like, I said, I'll take those if you don't want them. And I bolted that thing on the front of the hood. You know, it was a sweet
ride.
That's
awesome, man.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, at that time, Steve McKinney was, he was with us and see Zach Wiegert. And we're driving, you know, so center, right guard, and right tackle. We're going to the game, and Dom Capers, the head coach, is behind us at a stoplight. And we had a buddy of mine actually driving us, who was dressed as Boss Hogg, literally. White cowboy hat, white suit, the whole thing. And he thought, for some reason, Steve was driving. And he's like, was that you, Steve? And driving that car. He's like, no. So it was funny time, man. It was a new team, and, you know, just a kind of a franchise team, hadn't really gotten going yet. But
I love what you said right there before that, you know, Todd, you're like, you know, it was fun to do it, but then when the team's not playing well, and this is how we get a little more serious, you know, it's not as game day, you know, it was fun for a little bit, but then you got to stop with some of the fun stuff to start getting serious and down to business, man. And that's how a lot of guys, some guys don't do that, but the real professionals, they're like, you know what? It's time to start thinking about finding a way to win games instead of, you know, being silly out here.
No, absolutely. And you're only going to get, you know, you see, it can be in college, it can be NFL. When guys are kind of laughing up at the end of a game after they lost, and it kind of tells you about how much work they put into that week. Mm-hmm. It really does. I mean, I remember – if there's ever a time that I didn't feel like as emotional after the loss, you know, you could probably go and say, well, did you do everything in that week? And that's so applicable to everything in our world. And I've seen that in college. You know, I live in a college town, so it's, you know, I've seen it in different staffs before. We see guys that are just kind of laughing, and, you know, and when you put everything in, you should really, really be upset at the end of the game. And you know, disappointed that you didn't get that win. So it's very telling. And that's what I loved about that team. I was telling them, Seth, that, you know, when we'd land, we'd go to like a gas station, you know, right kind of nearby because it was too late to go to the bars and stuff like that. We just flew back in from New England, and we'd all sit there. I remember Timbo and a lot of the guys on the team. We'd just kind of vent and talk about everything and what we need to do the next week. So that was special to me.
That is great. But I think that what you're talking about is what pissed B-Roll off coming back from Oakland, man. He didn't see it.
B-Roll, they get that playoff check, obviously, as you know. And, you know, he maybe got in the sauce a little bit, as many of us were. And
long flight home, man.
That was money he was counting on. Yeah, that was probably a deposit on a Harley. And he had to pull out. That was upsetting to him because people, when they get back on the plane, they're not immediately having a good time. You know, that takes a little something.
Right.
So, no, everybody, that was an interesting time, though. Just the stories behind that, Westhoff and everybody leaving. So that was interesting, including my offensive line coach at the time.
Yeah, Paul Boudreaux.
Paul Boudreaux, who I liked a lot. You know, he obviously drafted me, but also Tony Wise was a great offensive line coach for me. Kind of, it was really a lot of fun. You know, going back to think like with Ricky, and when you kind of get, he was always accommodating in a way during the game time when I, and believed in you so much where if I'm sitting there lighting up a defensive end or I feel like a play where like, I'm killing this guy over here. You know, when you come back to it, please run this power or this counter or whatever. It's, you know, it's going to bust wide open. And sure enough, that would be get called. And that's a level of trust that you kind of have to earn. And that would excite me more than anything else. That is great chemistry. And you can't, you know, kind of almost can't coach that. You kind of have to, you earn that through the repetitions and everything and just the intensity in the game. And that's what was great. You know, just randomly thought of another Tim Bowen story that I remember we lost to the Jets. This wasn't the 2000 game. This was like, might have been 01 or 02. And at the end of the game, the Jets player, they won the last second or something like that. I can't really remember, but I remember a Jets player might have dropped his helmet on the ground. And only Tim Bowen could get away with this because he's one of those guys that could probably push a ref, and the ref would just say, "I'm sorry, get out of the way." Timbo, I saw him kick that guy's helmet, and that thing flew 40 yards, and it went down the tunnel. It just kept breaking apart, just and not, there was no word of it.
Oh, that's great. Didn't he kicked the ball? The ref spotted the ball one time in one of those Jets games, too, and he booted that, too.
I believe it. I saw him kick that helmet. That was something else.
Man, he even had the referees intimidated, man.
Oh, yeah, look. We were at Minnesota, and I wish I could get some video footage of this. I remember because watching this from the sidelines, I saw he got a sack. You know, he's not just going to be the pass-rushing threat so much. You know, he's so efficient on the run. But he got a sack on it. It might have been Culpepper, I'm not sure who it was, but he got on top of him and started acting like he was smacking him. Man, it was that it would anybody else, those flags would have been flying. And I was dying out laughing in the middle of the game. And the refs just kind of looked away.
No part of it. Well, we're going to let you go here soon, Todd, but two last questions. You talked about chemistry on the offensive line. I can't have Todd Wade on here and not talk about Mark Dixon, because I know you guys had a special relationship. So talk about that relationship and give us your favorite Mark Dixon story.
Oh, gosh. You know, Mark was just – I learned a lot from Mark, a good bit older than me when I came in. And I loved his attitude. I felt like being the younger guy, I was able to kind of draw a lot out of him. You know, Mark would kind of – he'd sometimes be quiet, almost too quiet when I was watching film with him or something like that. And I'd be like, you know, hey, say something, you know, or yeah. Then he'd give a little wise crack, but Mark was really just, you know, unselfish, you know, good athlete. You know, he obviously had his share of injuries, but somebody just that you really appreciated on your offensive line, and somebody you could just talk football with more than anything else. One thing I do remember, you know, we always joked about going upstairs at the Dolphins facility. You just don't. I learned in my rookie year, if you have a question for the coach, you don't go upstairs or you're kissing ass, right? And it probably would have helped me to have gone upstairs a couple of times and ask a damn question. I kind of wait, and I probably forgot to ask later on. But it was always a joke. And I remember Wanstead one time got in on the joke talking about Dixon going upstairs. I don't know if he was spotted going up that elevator. So they actually, I don't know who did it. I don't know if the staff was behind it, but somebody got a mannequin and put his jersey on it and had it sitting there up that balcony right by the coach's office up there.
Oh, that would overlook the practice field.
Yes.
Oh, God.
We're sitting there doing nine-on-seven inside drill against the defense. And Wanstead brought it up. He goes, hey, what's that up there? Everybody fell out laughing. And Mark, he didn't like the joke. It really bothered
him. I bet he didn't.
That was just kind of unbecoming of somebody to even hint about going up there.
He did not want to be a company man. That was not.
Oh, yeah, but it was so funny. You know, like the if you're – some of those things, in every position group was so different in how they made fun of each other. Defensive linemen were just ruthless. Usually seemed like in the locker room, just make, you know, and it'd be like making fun of somebody physically. just the stuff you just don't
Timbo
do.
Timbo and Jermaine, sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Jermaine, you know, be laughing, and Timbo would have the towel. Just laughing into the towel.
He's on you.
He's on you. He's on. It's so, it was incredible. But the offensive, it was, and I learned early on, like Tim Roddy was very, had very quick humor, and I would just get, you know, would just kind of just smash you with it right early on as a rookie. So you kind of had to learn to kind of fight back a little bit and quickly. It's always assumed that something's, you're about to get hit. But Mark and a lot of the guys would spend, and Mark would always have this thing going where if you ask too many questions, you know, or you ask a question that's, you really probably should know the answer to, you know. Hey, coach, what do you think I should do on this play? I mean, I'm, you know, and it's a play that you happen to be doing good on. Should I have done anything different? You know, I will say I never did that. But Mark, just like a truck, I can't believe I'm telling him this, but backing up, like a dump truck backing up, it makes a sound.
Up out you.
Get up out you. So Mark all the times would somebody start asking a question. you can't make it up. This guy's up.
That's great.
Well, we'll shift gears here because it is kind of an interesting, especially after that story. But post-career, you know, it looked like you've had some political aspirations. So yeah. Talk a little bit about that transition.
You know, in this town, there's a few things that I was concerned about. There was a kind of an old incumbent mayor that I was that was running unopposed, and I thought, why not? I felt pretty strongly on issues. It had to do with the growth of the town and the way it's kind of being done more than anything else. So I threw my hat in the ring, and it was tough because it was a June 4th election. You know, I'm the young guy. At the time, I was single. I was dating my wife, but just. Yeah, it wasn't the look of going against somebody at 65 years old. Yeah, 65 years old. That's from the town you're living in. Yeah. So I lost. Couldn't get the 60 and up vote, and those are the people that show up and vote. So, and then students are out, so I wasn't able to get. You know, it's June 4th, so you're not getting students necessarily showing up to vote. So, you know, it was a good run. I gave it a good try, but I did bring up a lot of issues and, you know, some little smaller things too. There was no Sunday alcohol sales in town. You know. Things like that. That was something I was, you know, that's just part of our liberties. You know, we should be able to choose for ourselves and do something like that. So that's, you know, something I talked about a lot.
That's what you ran your campaign on? Was
No, I didn't run it on that. That was brought up, and I, of course, had an opinion on that. So, you know.
You did. Sure. Let me tell you about the yay old Falcon Pub.
So, yeah, and now that was, gosh, that was 6 or 7 years ago, and now I have married, I have two kids and one on the way. So, I guess you're never too old, right?
Right, that's right.
Maybe it's time for another run, man.
I got to stay in shape, yeah.
for sure. Well, listen, it was absolutely great to have you in the tank. I love going down memory lane there. I still can't, the Incredible Hulk thing, we got to find video of that. We got to my video for Leon on that one. That was an all-timer. But that was really
wait a second, Jed, or someone I have seen video of that. I'm saying last 4 years or picture. It might have been pictures.
Pictures work, man. Pictures improve.
I'll let me see if I can ask about that too, and I probably can come up with something at least. But I do know there's a picture of me out there in front of that big Hulk, and you know, that was,
and a whole lot of kids there waiting for your autograph.
You guys, T-Wade won.
Yeah, we had to get a W in there. T. Wade, thank you so much, man. It was great to have you here. You were a good sport, and we miss having awesome. You down here. So when things things change, you want to come back down to South Florida. We can't wait to have you on again.
Well, I'll see you. I'll see you this fall.
Hey, Todd, I've got me and Mrs. Jones queued up. If you want to do a verse or so on the karaoke.
Oh,
look at that face.
Me and Mrs. Jones.
Wait, yeah. I can get some music going. Hang on.
No.
We got a thing
duet
going on.
Hello.
Come on, Juice. We'll join in.
Light out.
We both know that it's wrong. But it's much too strong. Let it go now.
Hey, you gotta point at the crowd first. You know, you gotta let them know you care about them.
We meet every day at the same cafe.
Love it. First, fist tank first.
Hold it here. Making all kinds of
things. He's starting to feel it.
While the jukebox plays a favorite song.
Mrs.
Jones. Yes.
Oh, outstanding.
Yes. That's it. Oh, my God.
Anyway, hey, with that, I think my day is about done.
I think that's a wrap.
I might go get a beer now.
Man, oh man. It's not Sunday. You're good to go.
Beer and a cigar. And I will come see y'all soon. I promise.
Hey, Todd, thanks for diving in, man.
I really appreciate OJ. Thank you. And I honestly, legends like yourself, you know, I'll never forget, you know, OJ hurt your toe. His toe was the size of my fist. And so I was like, man, to lose OJ like that, that was sick. Because you guys like that play with Marino and guys, you know, I looked up to you. I didn't tell you that, you know, but I wouldn't try and kiss your ass. But
about you.
Man, I got OJ McDuffie in this huddle.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot, bro. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good stuff, man. Good.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank, rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budging. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dolphins with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.